Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Regina, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, CAR T Cell Therapy, What's New? And today's program is supported by an educational grant from Johnson & Johnson Healthcare Systems, Inc., and I really want to thank them for supporting today's program. Before I introduce our first speakers, I just want to say a few words about who's on the call today. We have over 200 participants on the call today, primarily from the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities, so really spattering all over the United States. And we also have a number of people from internationally on the call, from Australia, Canada, Lebanon, Nepal, and the United Kingdom. So it's a global call as well. And it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now it is my distinct pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Karen Elise Jacobson. And Dr. Jacobson is the Medical Director, Immune Effector Cell Therapy Program, Physician, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Jacobson will be addressing an overview of CAR T cell therapies, understanding CARs, chimeric antigen receptors, when to consider CAR T cell therapies as a treatment choice, clinical trials for CAR T cell therapies, and specific examples of how CAR T cell therapies contribute to oncology care. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Jacobson.
Great. Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in this afternoon. So I want to introduce CAR T cells in a very general way, and then we can speak about them more specifically. So these are a unique type of cancer therapy that are generated by taking immune cells called T cells. Generally, for all the CARs that are currently FDA approved, these immune cells are actually taken from the patients themselves through a process that's very similar to the process whereby patients donate or people donate platelets for platelet transfusions. And then these T cells are then genetically modified in order to express a new protein on their surface, and this protein is the chimeric antigen receptor, or the CAR. And what that protein does is it really serves as a receptor that allows the T cell now to recognize and bind to a specific protein on the surface of a cancer cell after these T cells are reinfused into the patient. Upon binding to the cancer cell, it triggers the part of the protein that's inside the T cell to trigger the T cell to turn on and kill the cancer cell, very much in the same way that your T cells kill cells that are infected by the flu virus, for example. And there are actually six FDA-approved CAR T cell therapies currently. Four target the same protein called CD19, which is present on B-cell leukemias and lymphomas, and they are actually all more similar than they are different, but their indications for the kind of leukemias and lymphomas that they treat are slightly different. And then there are two CAR T cells that are FDA approved to treat relapse and refractory multiple myeloma. And these CAR T cells target a different protein on the surface of the cancer cell. This is a protein called BCMA. And so just to go through the CD19 CARs that target that are used to treat B-cell leukemias and lymphomas, because they work by such a different mechanism, because they work by recognizing these proteins on the outside of the cancer cell and then killing the cell through an immune attack, they were first tested in patients who had really exhausted other treatment options, patients with B-cell acute lymphoblastic leukemia, patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, for instance, who had relapsed or progressed after multiple lines of chemotherapy. And because the mechanisms of resistance to chemotherapy don't necessarily lead to resistance to CAR T-cell therapy, what we saw in these early studies in these patients was a tremendously high response rate, where over half of patients entered a remission with this one-time infusion of CAR T-cell therapy. What's more important than so many patients going into remission is that those remissions were durable. And we have 5 and 10 year follow-up on some of these studies and are able to see that somewhere around 40 to 50% of patients with these otherwise refractory lymphomas and leukemias are maintaining their remission over that time period. So we're very optimistic that these actually are curative therapies for a subset of patients, a large subset of patients. On the heels of that progress in diseases like leukemia and diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, these CAR T-cells were tested in diseases like mantle cell lymphoma, marginal zone lymphoma, and follicular lymphoma, as well as chronic lymphocytic leukemia with similar success. For most of these diseases, CAR T cells are indicated when patients have failed 2 or more prior lines of standard treatments. And because of these studies and the success in these patients, we now have FDA approvals for CAR T cells in relapsed refractory mantle cell lymphoma, in relapsed refractory follicular lymphoma in the third line, meaning that the patients have had 2 prior lines of therapy, most recently, just last week, in chronic lymphocytic leukemia after 2 prior lines of therapy. In multiple myeloma, CAR T cells are currently approved for patients in the 5th line and beyond. So patients have seen 4 prior lines of therapy, but we're excited about some randomized studies that have compared CAR T cells to other standards of care in earlier lines of therapy, so in the 3rd and 4th line, and that have shown a benefit to CAR T cells in terms of remission duration. And the FDA is currently looking at that data to see if we can move CAR T cells up into an earlier line of therapy. We saw a similar move with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, where patients who were relapsing early after their first chemotherapy or who didn't go into remission with their first chemotherapy went on to these randomized studies where patients either got CAR T-cells as their second therapy or got standard second-line chemotherapy with the intent to go to an autologous stem cell transplant. And those studies demonstrated not only an improvement in remission duration with CAR T-cells for those high-risk patients, but also a survival benefit to doing CAR T-cells in that setting. And so CAR T-cells are approved in the 2nd line for large B-cell lymphoma in those high-risk, early relapsing and refractory patients to their first chemotherapy. And now we're even seeing CAR T-cells being tested as a frontline therapy for large B-cell lymphoma, where patients who have high-risk disease at diagnosis get 1 cycle of chemotherapy and then get randomized to either complete 5 additional cycles of that chemotherapy or go on to get CAR T cells. And so we're very excited to see if CAR T cells can move the needle forward for those patients, high-risk patients as well. So I think the next question that I think people would ask is, when to consider CAR T cell therapies as a treatment choice. I would say that right now, the way CAR T cells are approved is that they're approved in the line of therapy where they definitely offer the longest time off treatment and the longest remission duration of any other available therapy. And so I think it's actually prudent for anybody who has one of these diseases that CAR T cells are approved for and has seen the right number of prior therapies to consider CAR T cell therapy at that time. But there are certainly clinical trials that are exploring CAR T cells in unique and other contexts. So I already mentioned the one where CAR T cells are being explored for high-risk frontline large B-cell lymphoma. There are, for multiple myeloma, there are CAR T cells that are being tested for high-risk, frontline multiple myeloma as a consolidation strategy compared to an autologous stem cell transplant. So those trials are ongoing. There are also clinical trials for high-risk patients with smoldering myeloma to consider CAR T-cell therapy as a frontline therapy. And then there are clinical trials in diseases for which CAR T-cells are not currently approved. So we actually have clinical trials that are ongoing in multiple different types of solid tumors and solid malignancies, in breast cancer and GI cancers and GU cancers, to name a few. We did see our first FDA-approved product for a solid tumor, a cell therapy product for a solid tumor. It's not exactly a CAR T-cell therapy. It doesn't actually involve any genetic engineering. What it is called a tumor-infiltrating lymphocyte. And so what happens is it's approved in patients with relapsed and refractory metastatic melanoma. And so here a patient's tumor is actually excised, and the infiltrating lymphocytes and T-cells within the tumor are actually dissected out and then activated and expanded because they're presumed to be responsive to the melanoma itself, and then are given back to the patient along with some inflammatory cytokines in order to stimulate their expansion and activation and anti-cancer activity. So we are seeing some progress in solid tumors and even some early approvals in solid tumors, and so we're very excited about the future of cell therapies in an expansive number of malignancies. We're also starting to see CAR T-cells in clinical trials that target different tumor proteins for patients who have already seen CAR T-cells that target CD19, for example, in leukemias and lymphomas, or BCMA in multiple myeloma. And so there are CAR T-cell trials that are targeting in leukemias and lymphomas that are targeting other antigens like CD20, also CD22. There's a protein called ROR1, and those are all open and enrolling clinical trials. And then in melanoma, there are alternative antigens that are being tested as well. So with the last minute or so that I have, I want to just really wrap up with sort of my feeling about how CAR T-cell therapies have contributed to cancer care. This is not like a baby step towards progress. These really represented ginormous leaps in terms of improving how we treat chemotherapy refractory blood cancers, and hopefully we'll break into how we can treat metastatic solid tumors as well. These are therapies that offer hope and promise and the hope of cure to patients who really had no other treatment options before CAR T-cell therapies existed. I think we had patients who went on our first clinical trials who were being offered hospice care versus participation in these clinical trials, and they opted for clinical trial participation, and they're, still alive today without any evidence of recurrent lymphoma now, 5, 6, and 7 years later. So I think this is a remarkable new therapy, and we still have way more to learn about it in order to make it better and more applicable to more and more patients. The progress we've seen already has been phenomenal. This does not come at the without any cost. There certainly are some toxicities, and I'm going to stop talking here and let Carolyn introduce my colleague, Sam Yamshin, who's going to talk a little bit about the other side of CAR T-cell therapies.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Jacobson. That was a superb presentation. A lot of promise, a lot of hope for people, and a lot of a changing of the treatment protocols that were not there before. So I'm sure there'll be lots of questions to you during the Q&A. So thank you so much. And you really set the stage for the program, so I want to thank you for doing that as well. Just a stellar presentation. And our next speaker is Dr. Samuel Yamshin. And Dr. Yamshin is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Bone Marrow Transplant and Cellular Therapy Program, Lymphoma Program, Weill Cornell Medicine, Division of Hematology and Medical Oncology. Now, Dr. Yamshin will be addressing key questions to ask your healthcare team about CAR T-cell therapies, also managing potential treatment side effects, follow-up care, what to expect, the benefits of CAR T-cell therapies, and guidelines to prepare for telemedicine appointments, including technology, preparedness questions, quality of life concerns, and discussion of open notes. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Yamshin.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and thank you very much also to Dr. Jacobson for an excellent presentation and really setting the stage for us. I think what's really critical to understanding CAR T cell therapy and the side effects and treatment is the understanding that this is really this type of therapy is a total paradigm shift and very different than other types of therapy for cancer. And the way that Dr. Jacobson described it actually as modifying the immune system to fight the lymphoma in a similar way that it fights the flu, I actually think is very prescient and very relevant, because I think that the way that I think about the side effects of CAR T are actually very similar to infections. And I think that if you think about it in that way, the side effects of CAR T are a lot easier to understand. So when you receive CAR T cells, essentially the CAR T cells are going to war against the lymphoma cells. And again, they treat it very similar to cells that are infected. And so when you get the flu or another infection, the reason that you might get fever or shortness of breath or the symptoms of that infection are to some degree from the infection, but to a large degree are actually from the body's response to that infection. And so many of the symptoms that you get with CAR T cell therapy are actually very similar to getting a bad flu. And so, for example, fever is extremely common. I would actually, for most of the CAR T cell products, I would say that the majority of patients get fever, and sometimes that fever can get quite high as 102, 103. Just like when you get a bad flu, that can be associated with shortness of breath or low blood pressure and fatigue. And so really, I think the way that I think about these side effects are kind of similar both in kind and in severity to having a bad flu. Now, many of these side effects are potentially treatable and are treatable. And with anti-inflammatory medications that we give to calm down the immune system, many of these side effects are temporary. Just like also when you get a bad flu, you have the potential to get delirious. That can happen with CAR T cell therapy as well. It's in many cases less common than the fever, but it does happen not infrequently. That confusion can be very disconcerting for families, and so I think, and for patients themselves. And so I think that it's very important to kind of be aware of that coming in as a possibility, so that you're prepared for it. That confusion can sometimes manifest itself in kind of a variety of ways. I once had a patient who their only symptom of confusion was I would go in the room in the morning and they would look at the clock on the wall and they would say, I know what that is and I know it's to tell time, but I can't remember what it's called. And that was their only symptom. On the other end of the spectrum, you can sometimes have more significant confusion, like someone who thinks, or had a patient once who thought they were at a baseball game. And just like with the other symptoms of CAR T, these symptoms are generally treatable with steroids. They can sometimes last for a few days, but generally speaking, they're something that we go after aggressively. With these side effects, we have now started in a lot of instances actually starting anti-inflammatories even ahead of time in an effort to prevent some of these side effects from happening. And at a lot of centers around the country, including ours, we have had a lot of success using these strategies to kind of preemptively try to mitigate some of these symptoms rather than try to treat them once they occur. Other side effects that can happen with CAR T, just like with other types of therapy for cancer, there is often an increased risk of infection. We typically have people, at least in the short term, on antibiotics to prevent infections, and so especially in the early phase after the CAR T cells go in, we're watching very closely for infection. Generally speaking, after the first week or two after the CAR T, most of those, you know, flu-like symptoms, the fever, the potential for confusion, usually by the end of those first 2 weeks, those things have resolved. In terms of the long-term follow-up, the most common potential side effects are there is still an increased risk of infection. The types of infections actually can sometimes, it's a little bit different over time in that most of the infections in the early period are driven by low blood counts, whereas in the long term, some of the infections are more driven by the fact that the CAR T has gotten rid of some of the immune system cells. And so the types of infections that we look for change over time. And then the other sort of long-term side effect that we watch carefully is some people can have some low blood counts during CAR T cell therapy. For most people, those blood counts will recover relatively quickly within the first few weeks, but there is a subset of patients who have low blood counts over the course of a longer period. A very small subset may require transfusions, but generally speaking, those low blood counts are manageable with growth factors and medications that we can give to boost up those blood counts. In terms of the benefits of CAR T cell therapy, I mean, I think that Dr. Jacobson touched on much of this, but I think the thing to emphasize here is that CAR T cell therapy is a totally different mechanism than really any other therapy that we had prior. And because of that, the way that I think about it is that it's really attacking cancers at a completely different angle than they're used to. And because of that, we really do see long-term remissions and in many diseases, a curative potential in scenarios that we didn't see it before. And so I really want to emphasize Dr. Jacobson's point that this was an absolute paradigm shift in the way that we treat really all of the diseases in which they're approved. So things to ask your provider about. So for certain types of cancer that may be treated with CAR T, there actually may be different CAR T cell approved CAR T cell products that are available. So for example, in diffuse large B cell lymphoma that's been treated with two or prior lines of therapy, there are actually three different FDA approved CAR T cell products that can be used, and all of them vary slightly in how long they take to produce and in their side effect profile. And so something that you may consider asking your doctor about is about why they chose the specific product that they did. And in talking with my patients, I often have a conversation and may present even some different options. They all are very effective, but there may be some slight pros and cons between different products. Another thing I think to ask about, as I mentioned earlier, that there may be prophylactic strategies that we can use to prevent some of the potential side effects of CAR T. And so I think it's before you come in for CAR T, I often think it is worth having that conversation about the plan for managing some of these side effects and whether it may be worth pursuing a prophylactic strategy. In terms of guidelines to prepare for telehealth visits. So telehealth has absolutely revolutionized the way we do medicine. And I think it's maybe the only good thing that came out of COVID, but telehealth is an absolute game changer. And it allows you to see your doctors a lot easier. And in the context of CAR T cell therapy, actually, I think technology has changed a lot of how we're able to administer. In the early days of CAR T cell therapy, we almost exclusively did these therapies in the inpatient setting. So patients needed to be admitted to the hospital to receive the therapies. But now in 2024, many centers are moving toward administering these therapies outpatient. And part of the way that I think that we're able to do that is by using technology in order to monitor patients' vital signs at home And we have a lot of new ways that, that you can watch and actually even some systems home some of the side effects even before they actually happen. And so technology I think is an emerging but exciting area which has the potential to further improve the way we deliver CAR T cell therapy. In one strategy for some of these visits is one strategy that some patients use is having a prepared list of questions. I'm always in favor of this approach. It allows patients to be prepared and really focus your visit, and importantly, to make sure that you don't miss anything that you wanted to ask. Because I know how frustrating it is to go home after you've waited to see your doctor, and then go home and you say, oh shoot, you know, there was a question that I meant to ask that I didn't get to ask. And you know, then having to send the question through the portal or whatnot just doesn't, you know, isn't as nice as talking about it in person. And so I definitely am in favor of the prepared list. The open notes are very interesting. So for those of you, I know that there are some people on the call who are not from the United States. There's recently a law passed in the United States that patients are actually able to see all of their doctor's notes and all of their test results instantaneously. And I actually think that this was advocated for by patients, and I think overall this is a really good thing in terms of transparency. But I do think that in this scenario, it can sometimes be a double-edged sword. So patients actually are now, you may be getting your results instantaneously even before your doctor has had a chance to see them. And oftentimes, especially imaging results or even some lab results, can be difficult to interpret, even for clinicians, but especially for patients that when the reports are written kind of in a difficult to decipher language. And so in those scenarios, I definitely recommend prompt communication with your doctor about test results, so that rather than getting stuck trying to interpret, you know, a scan or a lab result on your own. And overall, in terms of the long-term follow-up, the CAR T is a long process, and it does have ups and downs. Things can sometimes side effects can improve, and then there can be setbacks. But ultimately, I think that these therapies have the potential in many scenarios to be curative, and in all scenarios to really dramatically improve outcomes for patients. If I had one message about the side effects and quality of life aspects of CAR T, I would say that my three words that I would say are communicate. Your doctor is there to help you and guide you through your therapy, and letting them know early and often about things that you're experiencing will let us really help to guide you through this process and make it both as effective and side effect free as possible. And so with that, I'm going to turn the floor back over to Dr. Messner, and thank you again for inviting me today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Yamshon. That was really another wonderful presentation, just stellar, and providing so much information for people. And that concept of communicate is so important for our participants to hear. So I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And I'm just going to say a few words about the services of cancer care. It'll take about 2 minutes. And then we'll go get your questions all set up, because we're going to go into the Q&A shortly as well. So Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization, and all of our services are free. We have a phone line that people often call. It's 1-800-813-4673. And the person who picks up the phone is an oncology social worker. We have about 40 of them on staff, and so that no one has to wait to have the phone picked up. People are in queue to do that. And people call about many different things. They'll ask about, for example, help with the cost of transportation or help with the cost of the medication. And so I'm going to go over, and then the social worker, of course, helps them, or they call and they want some support or counseling services. But I'm going to go over with you just briefly the services we do offer. So we do offer practical financial and co-payment assistance, which can make a huge difference for people. And we also help with food insecurity issues. We also provide online support groups, counseling. All of this is at no cost. We offer, and the online support groups have groups for people with specific types of cancer or getting a particular type of treatment, so that they cover every type of treatment, also for older adults, younger adults, middle-aged adults, young adults, you know, the whole spectrum. We also offer, of course, these programs, about 80 of them per year, and we have a number of publications and fact sheets. And you can visit our website at www.cancercare.org to see the full range of services we offer, and so you have a thumbnail sketch of everything that we have available. And particularly in terms of the online groups, there are just so many that I think you'll be surprised to see all the different groups that we offer. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Regina to explain to all of you how to post your questions online, and we'll take your questions. Regina?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
Quite a few questions here. So the first question for Dr. Jacobson, do you think CAR-T will be approved for marginal zone lymphoma in the near future?
So this is a great question. Marginal zone lymphoma patients were included in some of the clinical trials, and CAR T cells show tremendous efficacy in this disease, but the number of patients that were treated in these clinical trials was too small for the FDA to consider for formal approval. However, the NCCN, which is the network that sets cancer care guidelines in the United States, did include CAR T cells for relapsed refractory marginal zone lymphoma amongst their recommended treatment options for patients who have had two or more prior lines of therapy. So it is possible to get CAR T cells for marginal zone lymphoma even in the United States, even at this point. But there are some ongoing clinical trials that are enrolling patients with marginal zone lymphoma of alternative CAR T cell therapies that could lead to further FDA approvals in the future. But it all depends whether you can get it currently. It really depends on whether your insurance will cover it on the basis of those NCCN guidelines or not.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks. And question for Dr. Yamshan. Will I continue with adalimumab after CAR T, and is there data showing a benefit to take it before CAR T, or will it suppress my T cells?
I just want to confirm that I had the question right. The question was about adalimumab, like the PI3 kinase
yes.
inhibitor.
Will I continue with adalimumab after CAR T? And is the data showing a benefit to take it before CAR T, or will it suppress my T cells?
So I think that this is a good question for your CAR T doctor. To my knowledge, there is some like laboratory data about regarding modulating. So the drug that you're asking about, idelalisib, works by inhibiting an enzyme called PI3 kinase, and there is some data from the lab about the effects of PI3 kinase inhibition on T cells, but to my knowledge, it's never been studied in people. I think that it's hard to say what the effects would be if it were continued, and I think kind of the risk benefit of discussion of whether or not to take it before or after would need to be done with the CAR T treating physician.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And last question for Dr. Jacobson. Could individual CAR T cells be engineered to carry multiple targets? T- targets?
So that's a great question, and actually one that is already happening. So we have CAR T cells that are targeting more than one tumor antigen at the same time. The B-cell leukemias, lymphomas, there are CAR T cells that are targeting CD19 and CD20. There are also CAR T cells that are targeting three different tumor antigens. So there are CAR T cells that target CD19, CD20, and CD22. I think these products are all in sort of early clinical trials, and so we don't have a lot of data yet to suggest whether targeting two or more is better than targeting one. But that is an area of clinical investigation.
Excellent, thank you. And the question for Dr. Yamshan, how are patients monitored throughout treatment? How often do patients need to go in for treatment or observation?
That's a great question, and I think it differs somewhat by the centers, and depends on whether treatment is being administered on the inpatient or the outpatient side. For centers that are still doing inpatient treatment, patients are generally in the hospital for, on average, the first 7 days following CAR T cell infusion, and they're on continuous monitoring. And by the end of that period, if they're not having the some of those side effects that we had discussed earlier, then they're able to be discharged, and they're followed typically every few days in the outpatient setting. If the CAR T cells are administered on the outpatient side, typically patients are seen in the outpatient clinic for those first few days. The monitoring strategies for the outpatient setting, I think, differ very widely around the country, and I think that this is a big area that centers are still figuring out what the best practices are. And at our conferences, I think that this is a subject that a lot of us talk about and try to figure out. I know some centers that are in the outpatient setting, seeing people twice daily in the outpatient setting. I know other centers that are able to do more telehealth focused visits and actually have remote monitoring for patients so that their vital signs can be seen and monitored without them coming in. And so the monitoring strategies in that early period, I think differ widely around the country. As those, as you get further out from the CAR T, I think for the first few weeks, patients are typically followed weekly, and then we slowly are able to peel back on how often those visits occur. But I think that CAR T, despite being around now for the first FDA approval in the was about 7 years ago, we're still learning a lot about best practices in terms of monitoring, and I think that there's still a lot of differences in different centers around the country. So I think in each person's individual case, I think those are really important questions to be asking your local CAR T center about how that monitoring is done locally, because I do think it differs a lot around the country.
Excellent.
And around
Thank
the
you.
World.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And for Dr. Jacobson, is there a targeted age group that shows greater progress?
So this is a wonderful question, because I think one thing that I overlooked in my earlier discussion is the fact that patients can be candidates for CAR T cells when they wouldn't have been able to be candidates for other potentially curative therapies like stem cell transplant. Most of the time when patients are not candidates for stem cell transplant, it's because of advanced age, where, centers will differ across the country, but generally, over or under around 75 years of age, it tends to be the cutoff for consideration of transplant. For CAR T cell therapies, many centers have treated patients into their early 90s. It definitely looks like patients who are older can do just as well, and both in terms of efficacy and toxicity. There's even a hint that older patients actually have a slight advantage in terms of efficacy of CAR T cells. So, the thing that we're much more concerned about when we're taking someone through CAR T cell therapy is actually their medical comorbidities, not their biologic age. So Dr. Yamshin talked about some of the side effects that we can see. Obviously, if patients have, they need to have some cardiac reserve and pulmonary reserve and kidney function reserves and liver function reserve in order to withstand some of those toxicities. And so those are the things that we tend to focus on more when considering whether someone is eligible for CAR T, as opposed to really focusing on the patient's biologic age.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And for Dr. Yamshin, can you please touch on the long-term side effects of cytokine release syndrome and ICANS in patients undergoing CAR T therapy?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think that this is one of the top questions that I get when I'm counseling patients is the cytokine release syndrome, and I think the neurotoxicity in particular are very scary for patients, and patients are very worried about the long-term potential. Thankfully, in the vast majority of the cases, the cytokine release syndrome and the neurotoxicity are temporary. And so these are things that we expect actually by the time that you are for centers that are treating people on the inpatient side, by the time people are being discharged from the hospital, or for those who are being treated on the outpatient side, by the time you're being taken out of the day clinic, that these symptoms will have resolved. And past that first early period, the chances of them coming later is present, but is quite rare. Anecdotally, I think I have had a few patients who have had some long-term, more mild confusion or like memory difficulties, and it's hard to know whether those anecdotally have been in older patients, and so it's hard to know whether those are CAR related or not. I think it's possible, and this is an area that we're still looking into. But overall, I think outside of rare instances, we tend to think of those symptoms as early side effects that should be resolved by the time you're out of the early period for CAR T cell therapy.
Excellent, thank you. And a lot of good questions, a lot of and great speakers to answer them, address them. So for Dr. Jacobson, is there a concern for secondary malignancies with this treatment?
Yeah, thanks for that question. This is a very relevant question, I think, in light of some recent news that came out from the FDA. So I want to take a step back and just remind people how CAR T cells are developed. Of course, if you remember from earlier in this hour, I told you that we, for the CAR T cells that we treat patients with today, we take the T cells from the patient's own bloodstream, and then they get genetically modified, and a new genetic material is introduced into the cell. And anytime you introduce new genetic material into a cell, there is a chance that genetic material could insert itself in a part of the genome that could lead to a mutation that could cause the cell to become a cancer. And so because these are T cells, then we would be worried about the risk of developing specifically cancers of T cells, T cell leukemias and lymphomas. We have known about that theoretical risk for CAR T cells since they were first tested in humans back in the around 2010. And as a result, programs need to follow patients who get CAR T cells for at least annually for at least 15 years following their CAR T cell treatment to track for the development of these secondary cancers. So we had not heard about any secondary cancers from CAR T cells until this year, until 2023. At this point, there have been somewhere between 20 and 40,000 patients treated with CAR T cells, and the FDA is currently investigating approximately 20 cases of T-cell cancers in patients who received CAR T-cell therapies. Only three of these have been shown to be T-cell cancers involving T-cells that have the gene for the chimeric antigen receptor in their cells. The others are still under investigation. So it does appear that CAR T-cells do, it's not just a hypothetical risk, they are associated with a small risk of the development of a T-cell malignancy. What the actual risk is still yet to be determined. It could be 1 in 10,000 or 1 in 100,000 and be very, very small. I think we have to wait for these investigations, regardless of how many of these 20 cases end up being linked to the CAR T-cell therapy itself. The risk is going to be very, very small, and the risk is ultimately going to be smaller than the risk of developing secondary bone marrow cancers like myelodysplastic syndrome and acute myeloid leukemia from some of the other treatments we give standardly to patients with leukemias, lymphomas, and myelomas, including anthracyclines like adriamycin, which is part of R-CHOP, or high-dose chemotherapy, which is part of the conditioning for an autologous stem cell transplant. So there's definitely more to come on this. I think there is it's more than a hypothetical risk at this point, but the risk is incredibly small. And I think when we're thinking about the risk-benefit ratio, you know, what I often tell my patients in the room with me is that it's really hard to hear that a treatment that we're going to give you for your cancer can cause another type of cancer. But the elephant in the room is the cancer that we have to treat. That's the one we know you have, and that without effective treatment, you know, could be life-shortening. And we're trading that known risk for a small theoretical risk. And I think that's where we are in terms of what we know about this at this point.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you. And the last question for Dr. Yamshan, what percent of patients require IVGH infusions after CAR T?
So I actually, if you don't mind, I just want to quickly add something to the previous question, if that's okay.
Sure.
First of all, I think that Dr. Jacobson covered everything beautifully. I think so. The only thing that I wanted to say was actually at our recent transplant and cellular therapy conference, our national meeting, the FDA actually came and spoke with the session about this exact question and kind of gave their rationale for why they reported on this. And the thing that they emphasized, so not the treating clinicians in the room, but actually the FDA themselves, was that they felt very strongly that from the FDA side that the benefit of CAR T continues to far, far, far outweigh the risks. And so despite the fact that the FDA was making these statements, they wanted to emphasize in this national meeting that's still very much the case. So we were all, I think, very relieved to hear that from the FDA directly. So to answer the question about IVIG, I think that treatment practices vary across the country, and I actually, my practice is to monitor people for low immunoglobulins, which is quite common, especially in patients with lymphoma, where the CAR T is targeting the B cells and that make antibodies, and so. I tend to treat patients based on a threshold of what their immunoglobulin levels are. I know that other centers, that's not standard, and other centers around the country treat only if people have infections. So I think that that's another great question to talk about with your CAR T treater: is what is their threshold for IVIG, and how do they approach that question of immunoglobulin infusions? It's an excellent question. And again, I think kind of highlights the degree to which practices do continue to vary around the country and around the world.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dr. Yamshan. I want to thank our speakers. You've been phenomenal. I want to thank our participants. I'm going to ask each of our speakers to just give a takeaway, starting with Dr. Jacobson and then Dr. Yamshan, just a takeaway from today's program that we'd like you to just I'm going to ask them to just highlight something that they would like you to take away from today's program. So Dr. Jacobson?
Yeah, I mean, I think the I'm going to sound like a bit of a broken record, but I am also going to use some of Dr. Yamshin's words, but this is a paradigm shift in terms of the way we think about treating cancers. And I think, you know, we have multiple indications in blood cancers that can be successfully treated with CAR T cell therapy. Right now, what we're learning from treating patients with blood cancers is being applied to treating patients with some of the more common malignancies like lung cancer and colon cancer and breast cancer. And we're starting to see some really promising products go into clinical trials in solid tumors. So I think this is an approach to treating cancer that's here to stay. I think we're going to see, we've already seen a tremendous amount of progress, but we're going to see even more progress in the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. And Dr. Yamshin?
Thank you. I completely agree with everything Dr. Jacobson said. My main takeaway is that in addition to being very effective therapies, I think that these are also therapies that, as I mentioned, are very different than other types of therapies for cancer, and because of that, they have their own unique side effect profile that is number one that I think we're all still continuing to learn about. But that, you know, in the hands of centers where they do a lot of these therapies are manageable. So, I think that these therapies have, as Dr. Jacobson said, completely changed the paradigm of how we treat, cancers, but also even moving into non-malignant conditions, I think really speaks to the efficacy of these therapies. I would just say that from the patient side, as I've mentioned multiple times, I do think that there's a lot of variability in how clinicians approach these types of therapies, and so communication with your doctor is critical so that they can help you with any side effects that you're experiencing, and you know your doctor will help you get through these therapies. And they're, like Dr. Jacobson said, I think they're here to stay and only expanding further.
Well, thank you both. You have been outstanding speakers. We've done this program before, but this has been really, I think, the best ever. And I also want to thank our participants for asking such great questions. It really allows our speakers, of course, to address your questions as well. However, I do want to comment on just the fact that I know that many of you, we had so many questions, you can only ask some of them. So for those of you who asked a question, some of you both are in queue, and some of you who are may have a question to ask, please go back to your treating healthcare team. I think Dr. Yamshin has said there are variations throughout the country. They also, each of your doctors know you the best. They have your medical records in front of them. And so please ask your question of your healthcare team and ask it over and over again. You also will be able to listen to a podcast of this program probably in a couple of days. So just you'll be able to listen to that again if that would be helpful to you as well. And that's true for all of the programs that we do. But most importantly, as we conclude the program today, I would not want any one of you to feel alone. I want you to now know that you're part of the community support, and we are here to help you. And we will be sending you a SurveyMonkey evaluation at the end of the program, well, actually in a couple of days after the program. And in that survey evaluation, there'll be an evaluation of the program, but also an opportunity for you to see any phone numbers, any links we gave, and links that we may not have given, for you to get additional information as well. So again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a great day.